This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. On this Moneybox Live podcast, we're talking about wills. After all, there are only two certainties in life, death and taxes. And we talk a lot about taxes here at Moneybox. Today, we're looking at the other one. More than half of adults don't have a will. That's according to new research from Canada Life. And the main reason people say they haven't sorted one is they don't think they've got enough money to bother.
I don't have a will, unfortunately, mate, no. There's no one to leave anything my properties to.
And even when a will is in place, there can still be painful family drama.
My stepmother changed her will, and we had no idea that I'd been disinherited.
Plus, in this brave new world, there may be all sorts of digital assets that your loved ones can't even access.
My own son had decided to buy some Bitcoin, and he very tragically died, and we have never been able to get access to it.
Wills can be a funny mix. They're a boring admin task, but they also carry a real emotional punch. Today, we're answering your questions, and we're looking at some of the potential problems. Before we meet today's experts, here's what some shoppers at Bury Market had to say when we asked if they have a will.
Yes, I have, because we're getting older and a bit wiser, probably, and sort everything out before we pop our clogs, type of thing.
I don't have a will, unfortunately, mate, now. There's no one to leave anything in my properties to.
At the end of the day, when the parents are gone, you don't want the children fighting.
If something happened to either one of us or both of us together, you know exactly what's going to happen with the whole of your estate. If you die what's known as intestate, then all your estate and your cash and everything is going to go to the Crown.
OK, lots to get into there, including that question of intestate. Let me introduce today's experts. I'm joined by Nina Sperring, who's partner at Price Slater Gorn Solicitors and is a member of STEP, the Society of Trust and Estate Practitioners, which specialises in estates and wills, and also by Jade Garney, Chief Executive of Searcy Law and a Director of the Association of Lifetime Lawyers. Thank you both for joining us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I always think you can spot the lawyers because you're the ones with the longest job titles. Nina, let's start with you. We heard that word intestate from that shopper in Bury. Some people won't have heard that before. What does it mean?
Put simply, it simply means that you pass away without a will, and in which case the intestacy rules would apply. And there are succession rules in England and Wales. They're slightly different in Northern Ireland and Scotland. And that directs what should happen to your estate if you pass away without a will.
OK, so what typically it would go to your partner or to your children?
Well, so if you're married or you're in a civil partnership and you haven't got any children, then it would pass to your spouse. If you're married with children, then the spouse would receive a fixed sum of 322,000 and chattels. That might be personal possessions or movable property. And then the residue, anything that you've got thereafter, would pass 50% to spouse and the 50% to children. However, it's important to note that stepchildren aren't included, and nor are cohabitants. So that's what you know as a common law partner.
Lots of things to think about. And Nina, how much does it typically cost to instruct a solicitor to draw up a will, and presumably then to store it as well?
Well, it varies. So I think as a starting point, it would be a simple will would be between, say, £300 and £500 plus VAT. Anything more complicated, then it would be an additional cost. So if you've got trusts involved and those sorts of things. But it's money well spent. If I could compare it to insurance and you had a property that was worth sort of £500,000, £600,000, you wouldn't think twice about insuring it. So it's money well spent.
That's a good point. Jade, what are the kind of potential complications if you don't have a will?
I mean, in severe cases, because the estate may be split under the intestacy rules, as Nina has quite rightly said, between the spouse and the children, in some extreme cases, we have seen the surviving spouse having to sell a property in order to realise the inheritance for the children. It's great if everybody's getting along after you've passed away, but there are lots of instances where that's not the case.
Okay. Let's hear a bit more from one of those younger people and his friend in Bury Market. Our reporter, Neil Morrow, asked why they didn't have wills.
I don't have a wife, I don't have children. I think when I've got children, things would change. As long as my dogs go somewhere, good, that's the main thing.
And do you have a will?
I don't think I own anything. I've got a tiny flat in Manchester, but I don't think you want to inherit the rent.
Have you got nephews, nieces, anything like
that? Yeah, if I support a will together, it'd go to my little cousins. That's where it'd go.
It's not something that you're thinking, I don't want to have one. It's just, frankly,
situationally, at the minute, I don't really need one.
Right, Nina, are there some people who simply don't need wills?
I would say that everybody needs a
you
will.
You would say that.
Even if you haven't got property, you can put your funeral wishes in there. You can put your wishes in to do with any animals that you might own, any personal possessions, or you might come into money. You might win the lottery or have some future inheritance. So really get a will in every situation.
Okay, that's interesting because, Jade, there was that mention of dogs there. So caring for your pets, that's the kind of thing you can put in a will.
Absolutely, yeah. We consider our pets as part of the family, don't we? So some people are choosing not to have children and just having pets these days. So it's just as important to put your will in place to look after them.
You do sometimes read of animals inheriting huge sums, which is always a bit galling. Nina, we've had an email from Adrian. He's wondering who he should appoint to be executors in his will. He says, I could never have the gall to foist such an imposition on a friend with there being no possibility of their benefiting by it. Is there any way the solicitor I choose for the purpose of drafting my will can get round this requirement? I mean, how do you pick executors?
Okay.
How much work is it?
Yeah, well, so it's important to note that an executor can also be a beneficiary. So that's one thing that's important to know. You can, of course, appoint a solicitor. That would help with longevity. So if you're worried about people that you were appointing passing away, and as long as the solicitor is transparent about the costs involved in administering an estate, then it shouldn't be an issue.
Thank you. Jade, we've got an email from Kim. She says, I have an up-to-date will. Well done, Kim. However, as I live by myself, if I pass away, how will my beneficiaries know I have a will, know where to access it? She says it's held at my local solicitor's. Does the panel suggest anything for someone living by themselves?
Absolutely. I always say that communication is key and that they should let their executors know that they have prepared the will and who is holding it. Pass the solicitor's details on to them so that if something happens, they know exactly where to go.
Important point. Right. It is very common for couples to draw up mirror wills. And as the name suggests, that means their wills simply mirror the other partner's will. So, for example, they might both agree to leave everything to the other partner and then split it between the children once they both die. Usually that's very straightforward. But of course, families are changing. We've got more blended families where maybe each partner has their own children from previous relationships. This can really complicate things. And that's something Stuart found out to his cost. I caught up with him earlier.
After my mother died, my father remarried my stepmother. And shortly after they got married, they prepared mirror wills. Sometime after that, my father died first. Mm. And unbeknown to me, my stepmother changed her will. And we had no idea that I'd been disinherited and she had appointed her son and grandchildren as the sole beneficiaries of the estate.
So when your father and she drew up these wills, your father expected that what, all of his estate or half of his estate would come to your family?
What the intention was that the estate would first pass to the surviving spouse, which I thought was not only fair, and then upon the second death, it would be split equally between myself and my stepbrother. The estate, in effect, included my grandparents' estates as well, because throughout the generations, it passed down to the next generation. And I know... My daughter was my father's only grandchild, and I know he would have been absolutely devastated if he had known what has happened. Obviously, I had a discussion with my father when he was in hospital, and he said exactly what he wanted. And I just took it for granted that's what would have happened. I mean, I just did not think that this could possibly happen.
What's interesting here is that you and your dad, you haven't been defrauded. This is all perfectly legal. This is how wills can work.
Oh, yes. Once I started looking into it, I suddenly realised what the limitations of mirror wills are, because the moment the estate passes to the remaining spouse, they have complete control over what happens after then. So effectively, my stepmother did absolutely nothing wrong.
Stuart, how much money were you expecting to receive from your father's estate when it eventually would have passed to you?
Well, I know how much I would have got. It would have been £150,000, but I had absolutely no idea what the estate was. It wasn't something I'd ever counted upon. I mean, whatever will my father had made, I would have accepted. But the fact he made that will where his intention was that once my stepmother died, that half of it should come to me, I feel that his wishes weren't respected.
It sounds like this is a really emotional issue for you as well as a financial one.
Yes, it is very emotional because as a child, I had a very hard upbringing. And I know how hard it was for that estate to be compiled. And, you know, it is very hard to bear.
What do you want anyone listening to understand about mirror wills?
For my father's sake, I would like to feel that there's going to be some good to come out of it. And I would like people to be aware that, especially for blended relationships, that mirror wills are possibly not the most suitable will to have.
Stuart there talking to me earlier. Jade, a really hard situation for Stuart to come to terms with. But I should say it again, this is entirely legal. If my partner and I have mirror wills drawn up, I could change mine the very next day if I wanted to.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have freedom of how you wish to dispose of your assets. And it's something that your advisors should be talking to you about and those possibilities coming in, because we are seeing situations where there's an increase in blended families. And there are instances just like this that are happening across the country. But it can be avoided with careful planning with your advisor and the use perhaps of trusts that can provide for your spouse, but also protect assets for your children.
OK, well, that's something people are getting in touch with us about. Nino, let me read you an email from Kate. She says, if you're married to someone who's been married before and die before your spouse, how do you ensure they carry out your wishes? All types of wills seem flawed. And she says, I would like our estate to be split 50-50, with his half going to his two daughters and my half going to my niece. He could change his mind and leave the whole estate to his daughters. I realise it's complicated, but it must be a common dilemma. Nina, is there an alternative? What could Kate do?
Yes, absolutely. So just firstly, to draw a slight distinction here, with mirror wills, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to leave everything to your surviving spouse. What you can do is a trust structure, which Jade mentioned, where one example might be, if you hold your property as joint tenants, for example, that means that the property automatically passes to the survivor. What you can do is sever the tenancy in the property, and you might then own defined shares, which might be 50-50, 60-40, or 70-30 for argument's sake. Let's say it's 50-50. You can hold that half defined share in your will on trust, and you can give your surviving partner or spouse the benefit of living in the property. And thereafter, it passes to your children, so it's preserved for the next generation. Mm. And you can do the same with your liquid assets as well. You can equalize them, hold them in your sole name, and create what's called a flexible life interest trust, where the spouse or partner has the benefit of it during their lifetime, but ultimately it passes to the next generation as you would want it to. And you can do that in mirror wills.
What about something called mutual wills? Can that work as a solution to this?
Okay, so yes, it can, but there are pros and cons. So a mutual will is like a contractual agreement. So it does mean that they can be enforced. But the difficulty with that is it doesn't take into consideration a change in circumstances. So let's say you went on to have a child after the first person had passed away. You wouldn't then be able to change your will. So it's very rigid and not very flexible.
Thank you very much. But it's good to hear there are options, there are alternatives. Right. There are very few teenagers who would think to draw up a will, which is entirely understandable. But we're going to hear now from Claire. Now, she faced a horrible tragedy when her teenage son suddenly died. But she also has a cautionary tale and she wanted to share it with Moneybox Live listeners.
I just have real concerns about what happens with cryptocurrency when a loved one dies. My own son had decided to buy some Bitcoin. He was quite young at the time. He was about 17. And he very tragically died just a few months later. And we have never been able to trace where that is or get access to it. Now, it wasn't a big sum of money for us. And obviously, I had many other things happening that I was concerned about and other concerns. at the time. So I've never really pursued it. But hearing more and more people, and also older and older people, frankly, now buying into the cryptocurrency market, it's a real concern to me. How do you safely capture those details in a way that your loved ones can access them after, you know, potentially a tragic sudden event?
Tell me a bit about your son. He sounds like he was quite into tech.
Yeah, I think it was excitement for him. He could see, he was reading about the returns. So for him, it was worth the risk.
So he had investments in crypto. I mean, you sound like you know more than a lot of people about this.
I'm not sure that's true. I know very little about crypto. I've never invested it in myself. I just know that there are these numbers. I was thinking about it this morning, and it seems to me that, like, if you have a bank account or even a premium bond or any other kind of savings, vehicle, investment, it's based around your identity. So the key to unlock the funds or the money is who you are. And if you have death certificate, then that can unlock the funding or the, you know, the vehicle. Whereas with crypto, it seems to be a lot about the numbers. So even if you could get hold of the numbers, even if you weren't the person who'd bought the cryptocurrency or the Bitcoin, I think you could probably still access it.
Now, you've talked about having a lot going on immediately after such an unexpected death. Have you tried since then to get access to those crypto assets?
I wrote two emails to somebody that I found in my son's email trail somehow. And I just gave up, frankly.
What do you want our listeners to think about?
Definitely think about recording those numbers in a way that's safe. Don't rely 100% on your tech. I'm pretty sure that everything I would have needed is in my son's mobile phone somewhere, but we were unable to get that phone unlocked. But to this day, I just think it's a real unknown.
Claire, thank you so much for thinking to share that with our listeners. Jade, I don't think even Moneybox would suggest a teenager needs a will. Clearly, Claire's thinking about other families. And as she says, it's about having the energy while you're going through a bereavement to try and track this stuff down. How could you manage digital assets in a will?
Absolutely. It's really important to make sure that they're included. You don't want to put any sensitive information on the face of the will, because the will can become a public document when you go to probate. But what you want to do is keep a secure list with login details, passwords, any secure keys, that kind of information, and keep it in a safe place. What you might also want to do is provide a letter of wishes, because many of us are not au fait with cryptocurrencies and digital assets. And in that letter, you can describe how they can access those assets and transfer them to the beneficiaries.
Nina, that really matters, doesn't it? Because Claire knew about her son's Bitcoin. A lot of families wouldn't necessarily even know they had to go and look.
Absolutely. And STEP, that's the Society of Trustee and Estate Practitioners, have done a really good article on their website called memories.step.org. If I could signpost the listeners to there. And that shows you how to update your legacy settings. It gives you all of the information for main accounts like Facebook and those sorts of things. So that should help people out.
Yeah, that's actually really useful advice, isn't it? Because there's some research out today from Canada Life suggesting only 12% of people with a will do include digital assets, which you think of things like crypto, but it could also be photographs, access to social media accounts, that kind of thing. And Jade, you've done some work on this at the Association of Lifetime Lawyers, haven't you? Is the value of what we store digitally growing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. We're seeing that 86% of adults over the age of 30 actually have digital assets, but less than 20% of those have actually recorded any information about them in their wills.
Joan's been in touch. She says, I've made a will and my son has a copy, including how to get into my computer. So many people do not leave details of how to access computers. A friend's husband died last year and she's not been able to access records that are held on the computer. It's a really important point, isn't it? Right, we've had an email from someone who wants to remain anonymous. He's asked quite a few different questions. With his permission, we've shortened it a bit and his words are being spoken by one of our team.
I'm in my 70s, married with two sons. I've built up a very substantial stocks and shares ISA over the decades of £500,000. My question is, for complex family reasons, I'd like to leave one of my son's two daughters a legacy in my will for when they're older. How can I write such a fund or trust fund within a will? I do not wish him to have any part of this arrangement. I'll be leaving money to my other son in a straightforward will to pass on to his children.
Right, Nina, there's a lot there, isn't there? I'm sure our listener has given this a lot of thought. Effectively writing one adult child out of a will, it's not something anyone's going to do lightly. And it does show the complexities of drawing up your wishes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very, very sad, but unfortunately it is common. My advice would be go and see somebody that's qualified and that specialises in this area, for example, a STEP qualified member, because they'll understand, they'll be used to it, and they'll be able to provide proper advice. So the sorts of things that you do need to be aware of when you're disinheriting a child, for example, you could reconcile and then you might lose capacity to change your will back. And you also need to be aware of things like financial dependency. So they're the sorts of things that would come up in discussions. It isn't just a straightforward case of disinheriting somebody.
And Nina, a solicitor has heard all this before, won't they? You shouldn't be embarrassed to really explain what it is that you want.
Absolutely. You know, there's such understanding that comes with this area of law. It's not just an academic exercise. You've got to really get to understand where people are coming from. And it's hugely emotive. It's very sad.
Jade, it does show another reason why it's important to have a will, doesn't it? Not just so you can make sure your money goes to who you do want, but you can make sure it doesn't go to somebody you don't want.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really key. It's about ensuring that everything passes the way that you expect. And the most secure way of doing that is creating your will.
Nina, what about what our listener there was mentioning about setting up a trust? Now, I'm sure we could probably spend the whole programme talking about that. Can you just explain why somebody would want to and how they would go about it?
Of course. So there's lots of different trusts. I know a lot of people are afraid of the word trust, and you can have more complex trusts and straightforward trusts. But to give you an example, you could have a will that included a discretionary trust, and that just gives you flexibility. It means that the beneficiaries don't have an automatic right to the funds, and that the trustees at the time, the executors and trustees, can take into account various different situations, because your situation may be different when you've journeyed on to the time that you've made the will. So you'd do a letter of wishes, setting out what you'd like to happen, and then the executors can take a view.
It sounds like it's a lot more complicated.
It can be more complicated, but not as complicated as it would be if you left it and didn't make a will, because that's when real problems can arise.
Oh, that's very true. Jade, what about more complicated situations? So one of our listeners has emailed to say, could the panel give their opinion of how to divide an estate where someone has two middle-aged children, one of them has worked in a well-paid profession and has all the material benefits that come with that, but the other has worked freelance and hasn't been able to work much? How appropriate would a 50-50 split be? These are really difficult decisions.
They really are. And as an advisor, it's not our position to say how appropriate how you want to leave your estate would be, but really to encourage you to do what you would like to do for whatever reasons they may be, and support you in that. And what some people don't realise is that you don't have to leave your estate equally between your children. You can decide to favour one over the other if you wish. But if you do that, then I would strongly recommend that A, you have open communication with your children, your beneficiaries, so that they know the situation going into it, and B, that you prepare a side letter, a letter of wishes, to support the reasons why you made those decisions, because it is possible for the disappointed child to potentially make a claim in the future against your estate.
And even if they're not making a claim in the future, just to feel very, very distressed. I mean, Nina, it's a good idea, isn't it, to have those conversations before the will is being read, because in a way, death is the ultimate mic drop. You can't ever go back and ask your parents why they did what they did once they've gone.
Absolutely. And there's nothing worse than having to drop a bombshell on people that thought they were going to benefit when they just haven't. So if you can, try and have those conversations, and it just stops the difficulties when emotions are running high after the event.
Here's an email from Michelle. She says, my father passed away last August and his probate and will were released in November. His will had been amended 6 weeks prior to his death. None of his children are in the amended will. And she says, I've written to his solicitor to request a copy of his previous will to confirm that we have been disinherited, and they've refused. How can I get a copy of this? Jade, is there a way for Michelle to get a copy?
Yeah, there is. I mean, I would strongly advise Michelle to take some appropriate legal advice from a contentious probate lawyer, because she falls under a class of beneficiaries who could potentially make a claim against the estate. And in doing so, there's a process known as a Larkin-Nugus request that her advisor could prepare for the solicitors in order to get a copy of the will file. And this is designed to try and avoid future litigation through the courts, as the courts believe that if you get the information that's available on the will file and you can see the reasonings behind things, then perhaps that can avoid the dispute and court action later down the line.
Mm, but it's just important to be able to see that so that you can really understand your position.
Absolutely. But again, having those open and honest discussions at the time that will was changed could have avoided all of this to begin with.
We're getting a lot of emails in towards the end of the programme with questions. Let's rattle through a few of them. Let me read you an email from Annabelle, who says she's on a low income. She's a single parent to one child. And she says, not having a will is something that keeps me awake at night. It's so expensive to create one. Firstly, is there a way I can get a will done professionally but at a low cost? Secondly, if not, is there a way I can make my own will but that will be watertight? Any advice greatly appreciated. Jade, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of solicitors or professionals who prepare wills, they work with charities or local groups in order to provide free wills months. So I would advise her to keep an eye out for that as well. And what that is that the solicitor waives their usual fees for preparing the will in exchange for a small donation to a local charity. That might be an option for her. It is also possible for her to prepare her own will. However, I would warn that the language in wills can be confusing. And if you're drafting a will on your own, it can be easy to get that wording wrong, which could essentially mean that your assets end up in the hands of the wrong people, or worse yet, your will is invalid.
And we've talked a bit about some of the things that can go wrong. Very, very briefly, just remind us, what kind of price might people be paying for a will if they don't have access to, for example, free wills month where solicitors volunteer their time?
With that, as Nina mentioned earlier in the programme, it's somewhere usually between £300 and £500 plus VAT, depending on where you are in the country.
Great. And Free Wills Month, I should say, is the current month, but they've filled all the slots. There is another one coming up in October, worth keeping an eye out for. Well, that is all we have time for in today's podcast. Huge thanks to everybody who shared their stories. And thank you, of course, to our experts. We've been hearing from Nina Sparing from Price Slater Gorn Solicitors and a member of STEP, and also Jade Garney from Searcy Law Limited and the Association of Lifetime Lawyers. Moneybox with Paul Lewis is on Saturdays at midday. It's also available afterwards on BBC Sounds. And if there's a topic you want us to take a look at, please do email. The address is moneybox@bbc.co.uk. Please include a phone number if you can. In this podcast, the producer was Sarah Rogers, reporter Neil Morrow. Our production coordinator is Sandra Hardiel. The studio manager is Ben Houghton, and our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Felicity Hannah, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds.
Have you ever wondered why you see what you see when you're online? I'm Jamie Bartlett, and in The Gatekeepers from BBC Radio 4, I'm telling the story of how social media accidentally conquered the world.
Mark's explained to me he's going for 1 billion users. I'm going, for what? I'm sorry, what is it you're going to do?
They can give us a voice or silence us, whoever we are.
At Real Donald Trump, it says account suspended, everything has been sort of wiped off.
To understand how we got here and where it's taking us, listen to The Gatekeepers with me, Jamie Bartlett. Listen first on BBC Sounds.